times in the Gemara. The observed practice is that, like we do today, we say Kriyat Shema in Shul. If we go to Shul for Maariv, we say Kriyat Shema in Shul before the Shmon Esrei. And Rashi is, and that is said before Tzeikat Kochavim. And in order to resolve the conflict between observed practice and the stated time of obligation of saying Kriyat Shema, Rashi says that the Kriyat Shema we say in Shul doesn't count. Forget about it. And the fulfillment of the obligation to say Shach Bachav Kumecha, to say Kriyat Shema at night, is the first chapter that we recite before we fall asleep at night. That's Kriyat Shema.
Were they aware that they were part of the world where it doesn't?
They were living in those parts of the world.
Europe.
So they were saying it.
Okay, so that's a very good introduction to the very next generation, one or two generations after Rashi, the resolution of the Ra'avan. Okay, so that's the next stage. Rashi's statement is compatible with the written sources. You already can rely on Rav Yossi in the Yerushalmi to explain his observed contradiction between practice and text. Now, of course, comes Dr. Schwaber's suggestion. Namely, maybe Shach Lechav Kumecha, going to sleep at night after the stars set, is applicable in the latitude of Eretz Yisrael. But if you're going to be living in Cologne or in Worms or in Mainz or even in northern France, when in the summertime the stars may not come out until 10 o'clock at night, and you're going to be waking up at 4 or 5 in the morning, so you normally go to sleep before then maybe the Talmudic definition of equating Shach Lechav Kumecha shouldn't apply. And we should make the definition a little bit more sociological. When do people normally have supper? When do they normally go to sleep? And therefore adjust the requirement of Kriyat Shema to that practice. That was your suggestion, right?
Certainly.
Right. Well, your suggestion was not original. You were anticipated in this by the Ra'avan.
By a few centuries.
Right. Okay. All right. So now let's take a look at the... So Rabbi Eliezer bar ben Natan, who's a generation and a half or two after Rashi, a Ravan, kvar yikir irhur ha-minhag, u'makal makom ra'obo minhag batikin sheta'amo imo. He realized, just as Rashi did, that there was a contradiction between practice, people davening before the stars came out, and in fact before even the sunset, as we will soon learn, and the fact that Kriyat Shema was supposed to be said after the sun came out. And he said that obviously this practice that he's observed has been well established. Tiknu shelehitpalel velekro Kriyat Shema meba'od yom. This is what the Ravan says. So he says that they tiknu, some anonymous enactment. He's meaning that the communities in which he lived, obviously, since they're following this practice, ipso facto it follows that this must have been a decision of the great original rabbis who established these communities, assuming that rabbis established the communities, and therefore assuming that rabbis established the practice. This is a hypothesis which may require some justification, but he says, Tiknu, they, meaning our forefathers here in Germany, Tiknu l'hitpalel v'lekro Kriyat Shema miba'od yom. They enacted the principle of praying and saying Kriyat Shema while it's still daylight. Mishum d'nahagu l'echol miba'od yom b'kayitz. Because they would have supper while it was still daylight in the summertime. V'lo yachlu l'echol ela b'kriyat Shema. Obviously, they couldn't eat supper before saying Davening Maariv and saying Kriyat Shema, but Kevande and Nihigo, but Kayitz, once they had to introduce this in the wintertime, and he saw gam b'chol. It follows that they introduced it in the winter as well. Okay? All right. So according to the Ravan, took Dr. Schwalbe's suggestion and said that since the daily practice here in Europe is such that in the long summer months we eat supper long before sunset even, obviously we have to daven maariv before sunset.
Before we eat,
and therefore before sunset, and therefore that's our custom. So he just is willing to accept the community practice as completely eliminating anything that it may say in the text. You take the text, you interpret it to mean that you're supposed to daven before you eat. In Israel, in the old days, in the Mediterranean latitudes, they may have, in fact, eaten after it got dark. But here, we certainly can't wait that long to eat supper. And since, obviously, davening maariv has to, I presume, and therefore saying Kriyat Shema has to precede supper, the practice overrules any textual evidence. That's the Ravah. That's a strong pro-community practice decision. The...
Is there any requirement to repeat the Shema later on?
No, none whatsoever. According to the Ravan, v'shachvacha v'kumecha, meaning that people go to sleep after the stars have come out, is not true with us. We have supper, we go to sleep, and it's still daylight.
Where does he get the prohibition that you cannot eat before sing?
He cites some sources in the Gemara saying that you should not eat before davening, both from the Mechai and from Ma'ariv, but he takes that as
part of the sources are indicative of it's late at night, you're...
Whatever. The point that we're trying to make here is an established rabbinical authority who regards the community practice as so holy as to override or reinterpret what may be written in the text. And in some sense, the Ravan's approach to this is perhaps the most honest, because the generation or two after the Ravan, or in Ravan's contemporary Rabbeinu Tam, try to resolve this issue by other means. The Rav Yah says, it has been a customary, it's a generation or two after the Ravan, I'll read it to you in English rather than in Hebrew, it has been customary from the time of our earliest rabbis that in our land we say the Mincha and Maariv prayers together, and we recite the Shema in daylight. Its basis and reason is a mystery. So he doesn't try to resolve the problem, he just simply says, well, our custom contradicts the written sources, it's a mystery, but the implication of this, of course, is still that we follow the custom, not the sources. It's a mystery how this change took place, but in fact it did take place, and therefore we will follow the custom.
Well, there could be situations where you have different segments of the community doing different things.
No way! Not in the organized Ashkenazi community.
Well, what about when you bring Shabbos in early?
No way. We're talking here, this is again an issue of the reaction of different communities to diversity within the community. And as Professor Katz points out, these communities in northern Germany at the time of Rashi, and maybe for a generation or so afterwards, for them, the monolithic character of practice within the community was paramount. So someone who tries to be more from or less from, not tolerated. The problem is that the practice of the community contradicts the text. Well, so much the worse for the text. And for that, we have three approaches. One is the Ravan's approach, who says, well, let's be flexible as to what the meaning of the text is. What was time to go to sleep in the time of the Gemara is not the same as now. And in a sense, that's the most honest answer, because, in fact, as we know, there was a shift of 3 hours back from the daily routine in Roman times to the routine, the daily routine, in the 10th, 11th, and 12th century. It was an overall raise twice a year to shifting our daily routine by 1 hour, right? When we institute daylight savings time and when we go back to standard time. So we're used to a shift of an hour in the day. But in the... it's something we notice, right? But we get accustomed to it after a week or two. The... in Roman times, the day started at sort of more or less 6 in the morning and ended at 6 at night, more or less. And for example, nones, which meant the 3 o'clock in the afternoon prayer, right, was said at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Nones means 9. Comes from the word 9, which means the ninth hour after the beginning of the day, which means the ninth hour after 6 a.m., which means 3 o'clock in the afternoon. But our English word noon, which is derivative from nones, now means 12 o'clock when the sun is directly overhead. So there was a shift in the meaning of this word from nones being at 3 o'clock in the afternoon to nones being when the sun is directly overhead. Instead of the middle of the afternoon, became the middle of the day.
That was a special thing. And I think the reason they did it was because a lot of Ta-Nehisim used to end up the nones, so they wanted to make the nones.
Ta-Nehisim for whom?
For the Christian.
Right. The Christian. One explanation of this is that there were many, many Christian fast days, and therefore they shifted the whole day back so that people who could eat after saying the nones prayers would be able to, or say, eat after Vespers, for example, would be able to eat while it was still daylight. There are a number of explanations, so that's one explanation. Another explanation is the fact that there was a collapse of municipal services. That is, in the Roman cities, there were some kind of centralized timekeepers, either with a water clock or something like this, to mark time during the day, and with the collapse of the cities, those municipal services of timekeepers, the Roman watches, simply completely disappeared. Remember, this is before the time of mechanical clocks, and that therefore everything was done by some kind of an estimation, or the church had sand clocks and were ringing some bells and so on. Everything was extremely imprecise, but the church, as Benji said, moved the day back for this reason, that people could have supper while it was still daylight at the end of, say, having 200 fast days out of a 365-day year. So it was important that the fast end early. Also, the absence of illumination. No cheap source of illumination. No olive oil and whale blubber hadn't yet come in. It meant that in these countries, you had to rely much more heavily on daylight. So a combination of various factors, the absence of any kind of reasonable clock, even the water clocks which were provided by the Roman services, the absence of illumination, the presence of many fast days, all of these led the entire community to shift the day back. Right? And therefore, the Jewish day, which was in sync with the day of the rest of the community, also got shifted back. So in that sense, the Ravan, while undoubtedly not being aware of these shifts from Roman times to medieval times, was accurate in saying that the daily routine has changed. In the time of the Gemara, the daily routine may have been to eat supper after it got dark and go to sleep after that. But here we eat supper, especially in the summertime, while the sun is still high in the sky, and therefore it's reasonable for us to daven ma'ariv and say kriyat shema.
Okay. You mean that when the sun is still shining?
Yeah, the sun is still shining.
But we don't have to fast at that.
For him?
Aren't we?
That's the question. Did they
fast? They may have waited. Remember, there weren't that many fast days, so for them they may have waited, I don't know. But certainly they daven ma'ariv, said kriyat shema, daven ma'ariv, and the Rabban does not add this requirement of Rashi to say Kriyat Shema as a substitute for the replacement, as the actual Kriyat Shema. Okay. Yes?
So you're saying, though, that this applied at the time of the Tosafot posts and in the, like, the 11th, 12th, 9th, 13th century?
I'm saying
only
that...
to Ashkenaz?
And only in Ashkenaz, and only in the time of the Tosafot, and only in the 11th, 12th, 13th, maybe even into the 14th century, depending upon which community. But I'm saying that we have so far seen three approaches to this conflict within the Ashkenazi community between practice and text. None of these approaches say that this problem, according to none of these three sources. We saw Rashi, who says, follow the principle of repeating Kriyat Shema al Hamita to fulfill your obligation of Kriyat Shema, and then forget about the Kriyat Shema that you say before that. We saw the approach of the Ramban, who gave Dr. Schwaber's answer, and we saw the approach of the Rav Yah, who says it's a mystery. All right, I don't know how to answer this, but we'll just live with it. And then there was a fourth approach, which is the approach of Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam says the Mishnah is wrong, or more precisely, the Mishnah is a private opinion. That is, the Mishnah that says that you're supposed to say Kriyat Shema after Tzeitat Kol Chavim is only a minority view. Of course, nowhere in the Mishnah does it say it's a minority view. So this is sort of an invention of Rabbeinu Tam to fit the facts. But the Mishnah is a minority view. The majority says that you can say Kriyat Shema from Plaga Mincha only. Plaga Mincha being an hour and a quarter before Tzeitat Kol Chavim. So Rabbeinu Tam, in his usual fashion of trying to resolve a conflict between texts and a conflict between a text and a practice, is to insert some different interpretation of the text, or to declare that the text is a minority as opposed to the accepted view. So that's the fourth opinion. Rabbeinu Tam also doesn't say that we should change the community practice.
What was the time period of Rabbeinu Tam?
He's two generations, or a generation and a half after Rashi. It's Rashi's grandson, after all.
Is it proportional or is that proportional?
The Gemara, the notion of Shaot Zmaniot, temporal hours, is of course a Roman concept. That is, you measure the hours of the day in proportion to the length of the day. And let's agree that these are talking about Shaot Zmaniot, that is, that they are proportional to a fraction of the day. So an hour and a quarter may, in a long day, be multiplied into 2 hours or 2.5 hours. The problem is, of course, that that's still not long enough. The Rabbeinu Tam will buy you an hour and a quarter, whether it's a temporal hour or an absolute hour, but he's not going to buy you 3 or 4 hours. And since they were davening Maariv while the sun was still pretty high in the sky, and since, according to all of these opinions, the day begins at dawn and ends at Tzeitat Kol Chavim, so you're counting this hour and a quarter back from some period of time well after sunset, it doesn't buy you all that much. But the point in all of this is that no one of these four opinions in northern France or in Germany was suggesting that there be an elite group which acts differently from the community, or that we try to modify the community practice. And in fact, we know this very forcefully from Rabbeinu Tam, because as we learned last year and a couple of years ago, Rabbeinu Tam was in a state of recurrent conflict with Rabbi Meshulam and others from Paris and other places in France, where, when faced with a conflict between practice and a clearly stated Talmudic, or in their mind clearly deduced Talmudic principle, tried to modify the practice. We studied it in terms of the behavior as far as Kriyat HaTorah was concerned, try to change the practice, And of course, Rabbeinu Tam was quite vociferous, almost, I would say, violent in his threats against anyone who tried to modify community practice in accordance to interpretation of the law. Once in a while, Rabbeinu Tam did that, but of course, that was the exception. Rather than rule the rule, yes.
Is Rabbeinu Tam consistent with interpreting his fast Shabbat? Or is that just a minute later?
Consistent with what?
In a sense of, in terms of Ma'arav, that when he davens in the Kabbalah Shabbat, when he takes on the Shabbat.
You're raising the issue of when did Rabbeinu Tam light candles Friday night? We discussed this in great length last year. And my opinion, my firm opinion on this matter is that Rabbeinu Tam never practiced Rabbeinu Tam's opinion. There's something known as Shittat Rabbeinu Tam, which says that Shabbat doesn't start until 58 and a half or more minutes after sunset, and that this was a theoretical opinion posed by Rabbeinu Tam in order to reconcile two conflicting texts, but was never practiced by anyone in the time of Rabbeinu Tam. Not Rabbeinu Tam, not the Ramban, not any of the Rishonim, and that this practice came into being two or three centuries later. But in the time period we're talking about, Rabbeinu Tam lit candles just like we light candles today, or even much earlier. Okay. Rabbeinu Tam's Shita was not practiced by Rabbeinu Tam. As you know, I'm in all kinds of public dispute on this issue in print and elsewhere, but that's my firm opinion, and if you like, if you've forgotten from our shiurim of last year, I'm perfectly willing to repeat it, but that's we can discuss that later. That's another illustration of the major conflict between textual interpretation and actual practice. On the issue of what Rabbeinu Tam did or did not do, I had many discussions with Professor Katz on this point. And whereas he agrees with me 100% as to Rabbeinu Tam's practice, he and I disagreed on what was happening in the 16th, 17th, and 18th century. But I think I'm right on both counts, so if you like, discuss that later. At any event, yes.
This also may be an old shoe, but why is the lack of a day not popular? Why do we not have to when we go on?
That's discussed in the Gemara. We haven't discussed it in Shiur, but the question is whether you have to stand for saying Kriyat Shema or not is my focus between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel. So the question of how literally you take the saying of Chachmacha of Kumecha.
That was discussed in that context. I studied it, but referring to either the morning or the evening reading, but I thought that there might be another phrase being read. The commandment could be read explicitly as an independent third time that we can.
No. That's not.
Because it's very uber like.
No. Okay. So let's now sort what time is it? Okay. So let's summarize perhaps reading what Professor Katz has to say on this subject. He says it sufficiently well the halakhic examination of the validity of the customs did not bring about their abolition, but did leave some traces. During the time of Rashi and Laban in the regions where they lived, it was understood that everyone in the community, regardless of their status, practiced the same custom. Rabbeinu Tam's protest and Rabban's attempt to harmonize the custom of the halacha was aimed at preserving the religious practice incumbent upon all. However, the tendency towards variation, towards individual halachic rulings, were not halted. In the generation after Rabbeinu Tam, we hear of Rabbi Isaac ben Atash, who would recite the Shema together with the congregation when they prayed during the day, and would pray the Ma'ariv prayer with them, for a person's prayers are only heard as part of the congregation, and at night following we read Vetan Shema with its blessing. So already in a generation or two after Rabbeinu Tam, a little creeping elitism has managed to work its way into the Ashkenazic communities. Someone would say all of the Berachat Kriyat Shema with his Kriyat Shema al Hamita. Well, he may not have said in these
brachot,
but he was with the congregation. Yes.
It's the inverse problem that Holy can you say mincha?
Hmm?
The inverse problem, Holy can you say mincha? Is that discussed also? I mean, up to what time can you...
Okay, well, maybe we should answer your question first. Let's take a look at the posuk in page 4. The Eimatai coming to hold. Perosh Rashi. Ba'anan heki karinan mi ba'od yom ve'ein anu mamtinin l'tzeter kochavim k'dim mafarish b'gemara. Same question that Rashi asks. How can we daven and don't marry and not wait for the stars? Al kein perosh Rashi shekriyat shema she'al hamita ikav. But when we say kriyat shema before we go to sleep on bed, that's the main recitation. V'hu l'achar tzeter kochavim. V'hachi ita b'Yerushalmi, im kara kodim l'chein lo yatsa. Im kein lama anu mitpalim kriyat shema b'veit ha-knesset. Why do we say kriyat shema altogether in shul? Kedei la'amod v'tfilah mitof divrei Torah. That's Rashi. Teima l'perusho. V'hei halo ein ha'olam u'regilim l'kro tzamuch l'shchiva el ha'parsha rishana. We only recite the first verse, first chapter of, excuse me, of kriyat shema. Yim kein shalosh parshiyot halo likro. We should read all three. Va'od kasher etzarich levarech b'kriyat shah shnayim lepaneha v'shnayim l'achareha b'yavid. You say two brachot before and after. Va'od ha'oto kriyat shma samuch l'mita ena elo b'shvil ha'mzikin. It's only to keep the demons away. K'di amo b'samuch. Yim talmid chacham hu eno tzarich. Person who is well protected otherwise against demons need not say this. Rod kasher di imkein paskinim kura Yeshua ben Levi di yom ha-tfilot di emtsa tiknum yosh be emtsa bein shnei kriyat shema. We would have said the prayers before the kriyat shema bein kriyat shema shal shachorit bein kriyat shema shal avit v'anu kamenon kura v'yokun en omu lakaman ezehu ben olam abba ha-samech gula shal avit v'tfila. All of these are the questions. Lachain pirish Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam says the other alo kriyat shema shal beit ha-knesset dika. The Kriyat Shema that we recite in Shul is the main one. V'yim Tamar, Heich Anu Karim Kol Kachni Ba'od Yom. How can we recite it so early? V'yesh Lomar, the Kaimelan Krav Yehuda, the Amar Rebek Tfilat HaShachar, the Zman Tfilat Mincha, Ad Plag HaMincha. That the time of saying Mincha is until Plag HaMincha, the Haimu, Achad Asar Sha'od Pachot Rudiya, up to the end of the 11th hour, or less a quarter of an hour. ומיד כשיחלה זמן המנחה, as soon as the time of מנחה has stopped, מתחיל זמן ערבית. That's when ערבית starts. ואם תאמר, איך אנו מתפללים מנחה, תפילת מנחה סמוך לחשיכה, that's the case, how do we do with מנחה so late? That was your question. ואפילו לאחר פלגה מנחה, we could even say, daven, on occasion, we daven מנחה well after an hour and a quarter before nightfall. Yesh lomar the kaimelan karbanan da amu zman mincha ad haerev. That goes according to the opinion that says that zman mincha is until nightfall. The amuin lekaman, and it says later on, hashda the lo itna halacha lo hilchata lo kamar velo kamar. Since this issue has not been decided, the avad kamar avad or the avad kamar. You can adopt either one. So therefore, we follow on occasion we follow the position of the chachamim in daven mincha. Even after the time of the Plaga Mincha, and we follow the position of Rabbi Yehuda and Davin Mariv before actual nightfall, as far back as time of it. Or the Mikomakom Kasha Vahavi Ketrei Kuli Desatri Hadadi. These are two contradictory leniencies. Sharei Me'ez Etamana Metalim Arvit Miyara Hakalaga Mincha Mishun Vekamel and Deshata Mincha Kala Kedivrei Rabbi Yehuda Umiyar Havizman Arvit. We daven Ma'ariv so early because we think, we decide like Rabbi Yehuda that the time of Mincha has ended. But as far as davening Mincha itself is concerned, we take the opposite position. Al keinu marida vadai kriyat shema shal beit ha-knesset ikar v'anu shmentalim marid minyon svilan kehai tanai v'gumar v'yamu mishra shekidei shayon v'gam mishra shekidei v'knesset mitlasim gives us another answer, etc. Okay, I don't want to go into the details of this alternative answer, but the fact of the matter is, as Professor Katz points out, that in these communities in Germany, from through the time of Rashi, and perhaps 2.5 or 3 generations after Rashi, the notion of an elite group of society, that the scholars somehow should behave differently than the rest of the community, was completely foreign. And the notion that you should change community practice merely because the text happens to tell you something else was also completely foreign. This was the position in these Ashkenazic communities up until, say, 4 generations after Rashi. And we saw already in the Tshuva of Rav Haigon that he recommended some form of elitism. Well, you can't change what the community is doing. We know it's wrong. You're powerless to do anything about it. You at least behave different. So according to Rav Haigon, the idea that there would be certain individuals within the community who would behave in a superior manner to the rest of the community was acceptable. And we will see that in Spain, for example, that was the accepted practice.
Any students that came back from Yeshiva could try to re-enter?
Well, we will also see the idea that the students that came back from the Yeshiva tried to change the practice. That was happening in Provence, for example, when the Meiri is complaining about some of the students of the Ramban who come back from the Yeshiva to Provence and are now trying to change. All of these things that you think from Rabbi Soloveitchik's article on memetics versus text, all of these things really were manifesting themselves in one form or another in these in varied reactions of the different communities in medieval times. And I guess my time is about up. What time is it now?
Almost
nine.
Okay, so we will take it from here. I hope you don't mind, because this is really a fascinating subject. We'll move on to the 14th, 15th, 16th, and 17th century transition next week. So please, all of you who have the book, read the article by Professor Katz. That will make us move things a little bit faster next week.
Yeah.